The Guardian.
Auto sequence initiate. Ignition. A second service tower separation.
The actual acceleration of the rocket is phenomenal. When you leave the launch pad, actually, it's quite slow, and there's so much noise and vibration anyway that for the first few seconds you don't realise you've lifted off. But the third stage is it's absolute foot to the floor acceleration, and you are very conscious that you are going at a crazy speed, and you just are wondering when on earth it's going to stop.
Have you got what it takes to be an astronaut? It's the dream of so many of us as children, but it's not easy. Major Tim Peake beat 8,166 applicants for a spot on the European Space Agency's astronaut training program. In 2009, he began his intensive training, which involved living in extreme environments at sea and in a semi-submerged cave.
And you can really put people in a stressful environment in a cave. You take their watches away. They have no idea how many hours sleep they've just had. You can limit the amount of food they have. And at the same time, we're having to get along well and achieve team tasks.
In 2015, Tim was launched into space and he began his stint on the International Space Station. In his 2,720 orbits of the Earth, he ran the London Marathon from the space station's treadmill and completed his first spacewalk. He was so well prepared for life in orbit that coming back down was the real shock.
A whole ball of plasma wraps itself around the spacecraft and you get very, very hot inside, which sounds so simple because of course you're re-entering Earth's atmosphere, it's going to get hot. But actually I wasn't really prepared for just how hot it was. Absolutely drenched in sweat inside my spacesuit.
We welcome Tim Peake onto the Science Weekly podcast to discuss what it takes to be an astronaut. I'm Ian Sample. Tim, welcome to Science Weekly.
Hello, Ian.
You left school at 18, joined the army, flew helicopters and eventually became a helicopter test pilot. But when did you set your sights on becoming an astronaut?
I didn't set my sights on becoming an astronaut until quite late, actually. It was as I was a test pilot working in the military that the European Space Agency opened up its selection process to all its member states. And that was the point at which I realised that I had the chance to actually join the European Astronaut Corps. So until then, of course, if you were a British citizen and you wanted to go to space, you had the option really of joining NASA and becoming a US citizen, as plenty of Brits had done, like Mike Fole, for example, and Nick Patrick and Piers Sellers. So it had all gone down that route. So I was delighted when ESA had their selection process in 2008 and I found myself in a position I could apply.
Before you get to any of the testing, you have to simply apply, fill out the application form. Take us through that bit. What do they ask you at that stage?
The application process is really important because some people might view it as just, we've got to go through this process before we can actually get on with the real part of selection. No, the application form is the hardest part of the selection process. It's where most people fail. So you have to pay extremely close attention to what is being asked. And there are three paragraphs at the end. You know, they're seem to be very trivial, but actually the information you put in there is very important. For example, about what motivates you to become an astronaut and what do you think the role of an astronaut is, and describing your character and personality and any weaknesses, for example. There's an awful lot that the space agencies can glean just from those paragraphs.
Do you know the kinds of things that people tend to trip up on in the application process? Because I think something like 89% in your year failed at the application level. And presumably a lot of the applications that came in were people having a bit of fun saying they'd, applied to be an astronaut, but a lot would have been serious as well.
Yeah, some people trip up just by not reading the question, by simply not really answering what the question is looking for. And also the question was quite specific about answering this in 750 words. So you had to be concise. And some people went on for, two sheets of A4, trying to put as much information about themselves as possible to make them appeal to the space agency. Well, that was not what was requested. So it is paying attention to detail and really sweating the small stuff and paying attention attention to detail is a large part of what being a good astronaut's about.
So at some point you get a letter, presumably, saying, okay, we like the look of your application, come in for some tests. What was that moment like?
Yes, I mean, for me, it was a great moment. I really, you know, put a lot of work and effort into the application form. I thought it was as good as I could have possibly achieved. And so I'd have been disappointed if I hadn't been selected, but I thought I'd done a good job. And then being invited to the first round was great. It was also mixed with a little bit of trepidation, though, because I knew that the first round of hard skills testing, as they call it, was going to be the toughest.
Hard skills are largely skills that cannot be trained. They revolve around cognition, things like memory and concentration. My producer, Greya, surprised me with a test. All of a sudden, I felt like I was on a game show. Great. I've got the next thing being a test, and somehow, I think there's a mistake here. It says it's for me. I think it should be for Tim.
I've picked some easy ones.
There are no easy ones. It's to be an astronaut.
So I'll give you a flavour of.
You know about this.
I do know about this. Yeah, I think you're the only one who doesn't know about it, Ian. I'm sorry. So let's have a look at one of the things they did to us, which was memory retention. This was interesting because you just have a set of headphones on and we were listening to a female voice, but she varied rhythm and pitch and you never knew when the numbers were going to stop. So she was just reciting a list of numbers. And when the numbers stopped, you had to recount those numbers, type them into a computer, starting with the last number and try and remember as many as you could. Now, I'm going to start off a little bit easier, so I'll just start off
reading them down.
You can't write them down. You can just repeat them back to me. So let's start off super, super simple. 8, 6, 4.
4, 6, 8.
Excellent. 7, 2, 3, 5.
5, 3, 2, 7.
Well done. 9, 3, 0, 2, 1.
12039.
Excellent. We're up to 6. 074357.
Oh, I've got that wrong already. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Didn't get to 6.
And you know, you can see some of these things they look easy on paper. All I need to do. And there's an element of if you actually practice, you can improve your score in terms of perhaps grouping numbers or trying to associate them with things like a date. It might be 1921, 1921. Mm. Great, I've got 4 there latched away. And then, and so there are some strategies for trying to improve your score.
But you need to brush up on those.
It can be quite tough. Yeah. So we got up to 5. That's good.
Oh, no, that's not good at all. I think 7 is where you should be at least. There you go. Thanks for that, Greya. This is just one test among hundreds. And when Tim showed me the schedule from that day, my head span. The day starts at 8 a.m. and has blocks of tests separated by 10-minute breaks right the way through. It looks intense.
It was very intense. I remember it's stressful just because you're working very hard. You don't really get much time between tests. Not enough time to kind of relax, put it to one side and get on with that. Part of that is important because whether you think you've done well or badly in a previous test, you need to just forget about it. Forget about it and move on and do the best you can in the next test. And there's a real skill there in not worrying about something if you think you've made a mistake, and also not being put off or intimidated by the crowd of people you're with. I remember being there, you know, talking to people in the breaks, and you've got some people with PhDs, medical doctors, engineers, satellite navigation systems experts, and you know, I was sitting there thinking, gosh, you know, I left school at 18 and joined the army. Am I really, you know, going to outcompete these people? But it's important not to think about that. It's a competition just with yourself. Try and do the best you can.
And after that first day, which it sounds like focuses purely on the hard skills, do you then go back for more tests around the softer skills?
Very much so, yes. So the next phase of testing, the selection process, is looking at those soft skills. And the soft skills are so important. I mean, we're operating on the space station, a crew of six in an international environment. You've got to have great communication skills. You've got to be a team player. And it's really important for the space agencies to know if you have those abilities and that character and that personality that is going to do well in space.
So how do they test that stuff?
So it's a mixture of tests they put you through. Some of them will be group discussions. So they might just give the group a problem to solve. You know, you're in the middle of a jungle and you need to find your way out. And to the north are mountains, to the east is fast flowing river, that kind of stuff. Have a discussion for 20 minutes and then present your answer for 5 minutes. And there might be no correct answer. That's absolutely fine. What they're looking for is, how does the group discussion go? Does somebody take charge? Does somebody dominate it? Do you give people enough opportunity to talk? And do you come up with a decent solution? And how do you present that answer?
Tell me about personality types. Is there a right personality type for an astronaut?
There's a right mix of personality types. It's not just one personality type. And in the selection test book, there's a section there on psychological profiling and personality tests. And I think it's important not to think that, I'm not the right personality type for it. So there's a broad spectrum, but there are certainly some personality types that are unsuitable to spaceflight.
Which are?
Well, I mean, you don't want to be a complete extrovert. You don't want to be a complete introvert. You know, you need to have a good mix somewhere in the middle. And these kind of sort of qualities are important to have. A recognition of yourself as well, in understanding your strengths and weaknesses and understanding how to get the best out of other people.
Tell me about the actual job interview. At some point, you have to sit down in front of a panel of seasoned astronauts. That must be quite a testing time as well.
It is a testing time. I mean, many jobs, you know, will have a demanding interview process and interview phase, and certainly the European Space Agency selection was no exception. A panel of not just astronauts, but also, of course, the director of human spaceflight was there, and other directors within the space agency, human relations, and other experts in their own field, scientific fields, for example. And they're looking at you. They've all got their questions. They're putting you under pressure. They want to see how you can perform, how you can react. So it's very demanding.
But of course, Tim made it through the demanding selection process and went on to become Britain's first ESA astronaut.
I mean, it's obviously a whole plethora of emotions go through you when you're told, yes, you've made the cut and you're invited to join the European Astronaut Corps. For me, it was about 2 days before the actual press conference that ESA were going to have to announce this new corps of astronauts. And I hadn't heard anything for over 3 weeks by this stage since my final interview. So I was absolutely convinced that it wasn't me. You know, good luck to those who've made it. And I look forward on Wednesday to finding out who it is. And this is Monday night. And I got the phone call inviting me to Paris the next day.
After the break, we'll be talking to Tim about the intensive training he underwent in order to be ready for space.
If anyone were to injure themselves at this point, then it's a very, very difficult circumstances to get them out. So we're certainly dealing with elements of risk.
We'll be back in a minute.
Today in Focus is a new Guardian podcast that brings you closer to our journalism by getting behind the news every weekday. You'll join me, Anushka Astana, talking to people at the centre of the big stories impacting our world. We'll use personal perspectives and expert analysis to put you at the heart of what matters. Listen to Today in Focus and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. Before the break, Tim Peake talked about the European Space Agency's astronaut selection process. He beat more than 8,000 applicants for the spot, but selection is only the beginning. 6 years of training lay ahead of him, involving caving expeditions and living at sea.
We get the opportunity to really develop and hone our social skills. And for example, we spend 7 days living down a cave with fellow astronauts, international astronauts. And you can really put people in a stressful environment in a cave. You take their watches away. They have no idea how many hours sleep they've just had. You can limit the amount of food they have. And at the same time, we're having to get along well and achieve team tasks. So what's really important about these kind of things is, as much as learning about yourself, it's about learning about other people as well.
Tim, I've just pulled out one picture from the book that I'd love you to explain to us, but could you start off by describing what's going on in this picture for our listeners?
Okay, this picture, there are six of us. We're in dry suits and helmets, and we've got all of our equipment in a sealed wet bag. We're swimming through a very narrow gorge inside a cave. It had taken us about 8 hours just to reach this point. This is near our base camp. It was a very technical cave, lots of vertical descending and ascending, so using good climbing skills. And this is where we're honing those social skills, but we're also doing genuine cave exploration. We're with local Sardinian cave experts, and they're taking us down routes that they've never been to, and we're mapping the cave. So this was absolutely fascinating, to be doing genuine sort of exploration in an environment where there is certainly risk. If anyone were to injure themselves at this point, then it's a very, very difficult circumstances to get them out. So we're certainly dealing with elements of risk and learning about all the techniques that are going to help us on a future space mission.
And what makes a situation like this or a task like this stressful? What adds to the pressure on you that tests you in a group situation?
Well, that can be induced by the instructors. They can make it as stressful or as low stress as possible. And of course, they will vary that depending on what aspects they're trying to get the group to learn about. So I've mentioned about fatigue and food. Fatigue and hunger are the easiest ways to understand, what a person's really like. Make them tired and hungry. So you can certainly do that. But more so than that, you can challenge them as well. What are their fears? Are some people actually afraid of being underwater, being in confined spaces, being in the dark, working alone for long periods of time, all those kind of things. And so you can kind of build up people's stress levels there as well and see how well they can cope with that.
And when you were in the Sardinian cave system, did the instructors manage to induce any fallouts between you and the group?
We never really fell out. I think they certainly induced some lively discussions at times, and that's the purpose as well, is to try and get this, this discussion going, get people thinking about how to do certain things.
So let's go to another photo in the book. You're clearly doing survival training in these. Take us through what's happening here.
Yes, this is, again, off the east coast of Sardinia. We spent 48 hours in a life raft doing survival training at sea. So, being self-sufficient, trying to fish and eating our survival rations and managing our water supply, waiting for rescue. The idea here, of course, is yes, again, you can put people in stressful circumstances and you can test all those social skills. But actually, there's a real point to this in the fact that if we have an aborted launch or a landing that doesn't go to plan, we could easily find ourselves in the ocean.
And did you manage to catch anything?
We did actually manage to catch a few small fish, but so sushi was definitely on the menu for a little while.
A second service tower separation.
In December 2015, Tim was launched into space.
I felt completely ready when it came to launch. You've been training for 2.5 years specifically for this mission. On top of that, 4 years prior to that, maybe since you went through astronaut selection. So yes, you're ready. It still feels absolutely incredible though, on the morning of launch, going through that process from the moment you wake up, having a shower and then antibacterial wipes, getting into your sterile undergarments and then putting on the spacesuit, getting suited up, etc., going through all that process. Also the traditions that go along with it. The Russians are very superstitious when it comes to space flight. So, signing the crew doors, having the blessing, even peeing on the tire on the way to the bus tire, on the way to the launch pad. That's what Yuri Gagarin Sharon did, so we all do it. So it's wonderful to go through that whole process. Yes, you know, there's an element of apprehension, but really by that stage, we've trained so long, so hard. We all know what we're doing as a crew. We all know what to do if something goes wrong. So it's just a case of enjoying the moment.
Was there anything that you didn't feel prepared for?
I think that the things that you can't really prepare for are the noise, the vibrations, and the view, obviously, of Earth from space. These are things that the simulation, even the centrifuge, can't really replicate entirely. But that's also the fun stuff. So as much as you may not be fully prepared, I mean, the actual acceleration of the rocket is phenomenal. And interestingly, it's not when you leave the launch pad. When you leave the launch pad, actually, it's quite slow. And there's so much noise and vibration anyway that for the first few seconds, you don't realize you've lifted off. But the third stage is it's absolute foot to the floor acceleration. And you are very conscious that you are going at a crazy speed. And you just are wondering when on earth it's going to stop.
The official start time of today's spacewalk, 6:48. AM Central Time, the 192nd spacewalk in support of space station assembly and maintenance, the third for Tim Kopra, the first for Tim Peake, the first spacewalk ever for a British citizen.
That's great. For Tim Peake, check the depress pump manual isolation valve is closed.
Depress pump manual isolation valve is closed.
Both of you take your temp control valves to max hot.
Coming down is very dynamic experience. It's even more exciting than launch. There's lots of things happening. The spacecraft blows itself apart for a starter. It's in three sections, and of course only one section, the descent module, comes back. So pyrotechnic bolts going off very loud, and then it's tumbling almost out of control until the Earth's atmosphere picks you up and orientates the spacecraft heat shield first. And then the G's build up and everything that can burn outside the spacecraft is burning, flame shooting past the window. Whole ball of plasma wraps itself around the spacecraft and you get very, very hot inside, which sounds so simple because of course you're re-entering Earth's atmosphere, it's going to get hot, but actually I wasn't really prepared for just how hot it was. Absolutely drenched in sweat inside my spacesuit.
And what's it like when you walk out of that thing?
It's incredible. I mean, there's a whole mixture again of emotions, you know, having landed back on Earth, you're relieved, obviously, you've got the, you know, wonderful sensation of fresh air again and the smells of Earth, which are so unique after 6 months in a sterile, you know, artificial environment of the space station. But you also feel pretty rotten as well. I mean, you're not used to gravity and your body is in overdrive trying to work out what's going on.
As we were talking about all this training, and in particular honing all these personal skills, I began to wonder if Tim emerged from his spacecraft a different person.
I think you do, because from a pure perspective of training, you just know yourself so much better than when you started. I mean, really have a great understanding of what your limitations are and what you're good at and where you need to improve. So from that point of view, I think you emerge as a different person. The actual experience of spaceflight completely changes your perspective. To see how vast the universe is and this little blue jewel that's absolutely beautiful in viewing it from space. And you realize that down here on Earth, we lose sight of that. You know, we're surrounded by our environment and we lose sight of the fact that we are a tiny, tiny planet in a vast universe.
I get the sense you're keen to go back.
Yes, I mean, the view of Earth from space, I think any astronaut would long to go back to see.
Tim, thank you very much for joining us on Science Weekly.
Thank you, and it's been a real pleasure.
There's a link to Tim's new book on our website, theguardian.com/podcasts. On there, you'll also find a link to a gallery with all the photos we've talked about too. That's theguardian.com/podcasts. You'll surely do better at Tim's test than me. Let us know how you get on. You can email us at scienceweekly@theguardian.com. The producer was Greer Jackson, I'm Ian Sample. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.